What's up? It's your boy 9/11 and you tuned in to ABG Podcast. As always, man, you know how we doing. Let's get to it. So today, I think I got my first actual return guest. I've had a lot of people that's been on, you know, kind of stop in, give updates, you know, we do a little quick FaceTime or whatever. But as far as return guests, I think this is my first return guest. Man. Shout out Mr. Gay, man.
I'm honored,
what's happening? Everything been good?
Man, listen, I'm good, man. I'm excited to be here. And, you know, based on the information that we're going to be talking about, you know, we're ready to go.
I already know you fired up. Yes, it's your sir. Background. It's yes, where you sir. Come from. It's yes, what we do. Sir. So, as everybody know, you know, the big story kind of floating around college sports right now is the splash that Deion made when he left Jackson State and he'll be moving on to Colorado. A lot of mixed feelings about that coming from our community. A lot of naysayers and a lot of supporters. Where do you fall at with this? How do you feel about Deion's effect on HBCU?
Well, of course, because I am an HBCU grad, I fall in the place where I'm empathetic with the people who have a problem with the decision that he made, but I also am understanding of the decision that he made at the same time. Mm-hmm. So the dynamic is that you have someone who understood what their responsibility was and they understood the assignment. His assignment was to make sure that he came in and mm-hmm. he placed the spotlight on the inadequacies and the playing field that he felt like was not level at all mm-hmm. To bring some attention to that and make sure that people that were a part of HBCU, playing at HBCU, would get an opportunity mm-hmm. Because that's not always the case. And that disparity has happened for a number of reasons, which I'm sure that we'll get into. Mm-hmm. But he brought a spotlight on it and made sure that people understood that this isn't the way that things should be just because it's a historically black college or university. So, again, I definitely empathize with people who are like, well, wait a minute. He said that this was the place mm-hmm. that he felt like, for example, you know, God was calling him to that place to make a change and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I empathize with them because they really believe that he was going to stay there.
But yeah.
I don't really feel like, me personally, I don't feel like that was the assignment. Yeah. I feel like he had a moment in a season to capture an audience and make sure that he brought attention to the situation mm-hmm. so that he could build the momentum. And then it's the responsibility of other people to then catch fire mm-hmm. and make sure that they continue to build on what he's already established. Because he basically went in by himself and literally built something mm-hmm. and did some things at a HBCU that, honestly, we haven't seen anybody do. In the past. I mean... I've never seen anybody do what he's done mm-hmm. In terms of the turnaround, mm-hmm. the way that he was able to upgrade their facilities, the way that he was able to change the infrastructure, the way that he brought in sponsorships, monetized people's abilities, and even he had the linemen had NILs. So I'm saying what he did was he brought something to HBCUs that they did not have mm-hmm. prior to him. So, you know, my school, listen. FAMU is who it is, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
We have our own thing.
Speak on it.
We're separate from everybody else. You know,
speak on it.
We are the creme de la creme when it comes to historically black colleges and universities. That's right. I said it. Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University.
Yeah.
We sit on the highest of seven hills in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm a proud alum.
Yeah.
I was an athlete there, and so I understand completely what is going on and why people feel the way that they feel, and I also understand why he had to make the decision that he made as well.
Very good point. You brought up a lot of good points. And sometimes, and just to make it clear where I stand with it before we get just all the way into it, I always felt, and he kind of spoke, you know, before coming into Jackson State, you know, it wasn't going to be a long-term thing.
Right.
But I kind of felt, as far as, because I know his son kind of, he's been coming up under his dad as far as the coaching. You know, he's been right there with him. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like it was a 4-year thing. I mm-hmm. thought Jackson State may have had him.
Maximum.
I always gave it until his son ran his tenure there and he moved on to the next level or whatever the next phase of life might be. So that's kind of where I stood at it from the jump. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the backlash I'm seeing, and it's kind of like the mentality of our people over here. It's like the survivor's guilt type thing. Mm-hmm. It's like as soon as one of us make it, you feel like you latch on to that and everybody make it. But everybody's not designed for that calling. And then that calling that person might have only might last there for a season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. The impact he made, and how long was his tenure? Was it 3 years?
It was 3 years total.
3 years.
Yeah.
Has College Game Day ever been to a HBCU?
Actually, they have.
When was that?
We were the first.
Okay, you were the first. Okay.
Let me go ahead and put that.
Okay, because I didn't know that.
Let me go ahead and put that on.
Get into that. Let me,
you know,
what
let,
was
let,
this?
Let me just go ahead and put this out there. You know, when it comes to, like I said, the creme de la creme of historically black colleges and universities,
mm-hmm.
we stand second to none. We are the Princeton Time Review College of the Year 1997. We won the first FCS, what would be considered FCS, it was then, one double A championship. A lot of people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
FAMU won the first one in 1978.
Okay.
We are still the only historically black college or university to win a FCS championship.
That's
we were, in terms of the last HBCU that was able to break past the second round of the playoffs. We played against Jim Tressel and the Youngstown State Penguins in the semifinals of the playoffs, and we lost by 3 points. As a matter of fact, the teams that I played on, those teams went into the playoffs. My junior year, for example, we went on the road 3 games consecutively, and we had to get through. Let me tell you who we had to get through. And all of them, ironically, have moved to Division One.
Okay.
We had to get through Troy State.
Okay.
We had to get through Appalachian State, which there was a whole lot of hoopla. A lot of fanfare with them earlier in the year, right? And then we played against Youngstown State in the semifinals. And so I understand the dynamic of how the progression should look and why it's important for HBCUs to take the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that they can do that, they can't do that by playing in the Celebration Bowl. They are going to have to actually challenge nationally for a national championship.
Thanks.
Because if they don't, then they'll continue. There'll be a regression, actually, and the momentum that he was able to build, it'll go back into the doldrums, and we'll see a situation where kids are going to be like, man, you know, it was a shot in the arm, and you see what's happening now. Obviously, some commits have decommitted, but it's the responsibility of the people that are coming behind him, and that was the whole thing. He shined the light on it.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are coming behind him, you have coaches like Willie Simmons at Florida A&M who are highly touted. They, for example, he played at Clemson, so he understands what it's supposed to look
big
like.
Big time football,
and how you have to support. You have to make sure that you fund the football team because why? Because football funds everything else in most cases, and that's the case in every university.
Thanks.
We historically black colleges and universities are the only places where we don't put the funds into the program in order to make sure that it's at the top level. You know, if I take you into a FAMU's facility right now, you'd be absolutely surprised that they could even compete. When I was playing there, I think we had three flat benches, two incline benches, and two squat racks.
Listen to that. Listen to that.
I'm going to say it again.
Listen to that. Because I play football, so I know what you're saying.
Three flat benches, two squat racks, and two incline benches.
That's crazy. At a college level.
At the college level.
That's crazy.
And the room that we were in, and this is not to complain because we
made it work, obviously. Yeah.
We were dogs. But the room, I guarantee you, our weight room, to be honest with you, was probably not larger than a standard first floor of a house.
Wow.
It was not large at all.
Wow.
But we went in there, we got to work in, because the thing is that iron don't move itself. Somebody got to get under it. So
facts.
I don't care how pretty it is or what it looks like. If you don't get under it and move it, it doesn't matter. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think we're at a place now where we have to build on the momentum that he started. And I think we'll do that. I don't believe that there's going to be a drop off. I think we're gonna have people that do that.
Now, speaking of starting, now I'm old enough, and I'm quite sure you are too. I know we're around the same era. I'm quite old enough to know that when people look at the HBCU spotlight and think now is lightning in a bottle, I remember when Eddie Robinson had the pipeline going from Grambling. You pretty much paid for Grambling. You was going to the league.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Alabama, and it was the HBCU, but that was back then. That was the Alabama, the SEC school that had a pipeline. If you were black and you were talented enough to play on the Grambling squad back then, because you wasn't just walking on the Grambling squad and just grabbing a spot back at that time frame. When I'm saying Eddie Robinson, like anybody that know, you know, Louisiana football know Eddie Robinson, you know what that name holds, you know what type of legacy that entails at Grambling. So when we say Deion, you know, started, he picked it up again. He rekindled that flame.
I would agree with that.
Eddie Robinson at the time, like I say, he had almost a direct pipeline if you had any type of talent. But now, as you said, as far as the keeping the torch lit, I know we have what, Eddie Robinson, he's at?
Eddie Robinson Jr. is at Alabama State.
Okay, and then we have Eddie George.
Eddie George, Tennessee State.
So we have, and see, Deion, what the thing about Deion, what I said when he initially went there, is that,
I'm sorry, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Hugh Jackson is at Grambling too.
Hugh Jackson.
So people that definitely understand.
And I just seen that.
Yeah, they know.
Doing the classic.
Yeah, they know. So, but yeah.
Okay, so what I seen that during this time frame is that a lot of kids were gravitating, like you said, going to the HBCUs and signing out there, kind of decommitting. It was only one Deion, though. Deion is a brand within itself. Deion is a whole image within itself. That swag, that no matter if you go to any other HBCU, you're not going to get Deion.
Right.
So my whole thing was, is how can we funnel that? Because at the time that Deion put the spotlight back on HBCUs and kind of highlighted, because like you say, when you go to these other, they're not playing with other people. It's still us on the team. It's just a better level of environment, so to speak, better level of equipment and resources.
Well, here's the dynamic, and I read, the funny thing is, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I read an article today, and the article was talking about how state funding has been taken away from HBCUs. I think North Carolina A&T, the number was astronomical. When I say astronomical, I mean like billions of dollars.
Wow.
Where they've been underfunded. FAMU was on that list. I think I may have seen, I think Fisk, and there were some other universities on there, historically black colleges, where they were underfunded. And so how do we, you know, speak to that? Because there is a huge disparity in terms of the resources that are actually being taken away from historically black colleges and universities to make the campus more attractive, to open up the programs, to bring enrollment into university. Because we know that if you got a good football team, enrollment goes up. And that's across the board. It's an HBCU or it's a PWI. It doesn't matter. The enrollment is going to increase. If you have a good football team and you have publicity around that football team, not only are you going to get stellar recruiting, but you're going to also have enrollment go up. Where if enrollment goes up, then obviously the school becomes more popular. You have people graduating from that institution. It gives you a presence within not just the community, but across the country. And so people are going to different places and saying, for example, I went to FAMU in California. I went to FAMU in Illinois. I went to FAMU in New York. And when that happens, you have kids that are watching that as well. And so now you build upon what's already been started, the momentum.
So let me tell you my thought process with that. Like, I know it's a disparity as far as the funding, as far as what's funneled in government, state level. But that's where I thought we had a chance to shift the narrative. Because funding also follows talent, and it also follows the hoopla, no matter what. So the light that Deion once again has shined on HBCUs, and you've seen the talent, you've seen the experience, you see the bands. You're not going to see them type of bands on Saturday morning on college game day on the regular. So when you see
Ohio State trying to
I see that. I see LSU trying to slide something in too. A lot of them trying to slide a little seasoning on it now. But
North Carolina tried. At the beginning of the season, they tried to partner with us.
Yeah,
and they did a whole black experience.
Yeah.
At North Carolina, so we actually played with them. You know what I mean? So, you know, they trying to slide it in.
So that's why I thought we had a chance to move the needle a little further, because like Travis Hunter, so to speak, you know, at the time that was a Nick Saban prospect, you know, all the top schools.
He was the number one prospect.
The number one.
Yeah.
And for the first time, the number one went to a HBCU for longest time I can remember.
I've never seen it. I've never seen it.
So I hadn't seen that before.
In my lifetime,
so,
I've never seen it.
All of a sudden, I saw the panic start. I hear the whispers on the networks. I hear this and, mm-hmm. you know, tampering. I hear this. And mm-hmm. it's all kind of stuff you hear once they seen, okay, this playing field could become even. And it was nowhere near mm-hmm. scratching. That was one person.
Yep.
But that one person, like Pac said, if I can't be the voice to make change, mm-hmm. I can be the voice to spark change. And see, that at that point, they all see it. They saw what I saw, and I'm just a guy sitting here in my man cave. So, but I know if I seen it and put it together, they seen it too. Okay, well, if enough number ones start going, that number one go, okay, he enjoyed it. What about this number one? If mm-hmm. he go, what about that number five prospect? And these programs start building up, and then guess what? Now the NILs are shifting. Mm-hmm. You got that money being funneled into those schools. Mm-hmm. You got facilities, as we talked about earlier. It's not just those one or two, but you see those Alabama facilities. You see those LSU facilities. Mm-hmm. You see those, you know, Clemson facilities. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the spinning porches. You know, they all taking pictures now. They got their little brothers with them. Yeah, like, you don't go to HBCU visit and get that. You look like you in the league when you go to one of these visits now.
Right.
So now you get all that money shifting into these schools. And, you know, everything we do, we got our own sauce. We got our own flavor with it. And it just look a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So the panic started really right immediately. Soon as they're like, no, we got to cut this off right now. So I saw, you know, what was the crescendo
mm-hmm.
of coming to Dion was going to eventually have to leave. But I knew the money was going to eventually. And as Dion stated, he didn't need the money. Speaking on money. A lot of people didn't know when they talk about Dion that a lot of his salary was donated back into getting those facilities mm-hmm. up to par.
Right.
Because he knew he played for Florida State. He knew what a top-notch facility. He's like, we can't do this. We ain't winning with this.
Right.
We ain't pulling no sleds in the grass no more. This ain't the 90s. So,
right.
you know, but speak on, like, as far as, like, as you say, moving the ball forward with that and the money aspect. How can we, because it's still a light there now
mm-hmm.
that's going to be on these facilities and these, because now you're going to look at the disparity that you mentioned. Why is it such a disparity with these schools? Why is the funding so far off between a PWI and a HBCU?
Well, remember the statement that I made before. Obviously, football funds everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're underfunded and you're having to fund everything,
mm-hmm.
that means that it puts you that much further behind. So in order to balance it, right, or
mm-hmm.
you know, I should say, in order to balance the books,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to be creative
mm-hmm.
and really figure. Like for example, Dion was very strategic in terms of how he attacked this situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Y'all gonna let me be a part of a historically black college?" And y'all said that we can pay them? Huh. Okay,
okay.
Under Armour, come here.
Okay.
Gatorade, come here.
Yeah.
Whoever you are,
mm-hmm.
I need this money. Why? Because most of these kids are coming from places where money is the issue. The very reason why they're even playing sports is because they made a statement when they were probably 7, 8 years old. You know the statement.
Mm-hmm.
Mama one day. And that's the thing that's playing in their head the
yep.
entire time. I got a family that's on my back.
Yeah.
And I got to make sure that I do whatever I can, whatever is necessary
mm-hmm.
to get to this money.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, unfortunately, been about the bag for most kids that look like you and I.
Exactly.
I'm in your man cave right now,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't raised like Dose was raised.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were raised like Dose was raised.
Nope.
You know what I mean? However, the thing about it is that the dynamic going forward, we can change or we can shift a generation where they understand that, you know what, I know why you came here.
Mm-hmm.
We can get you to the money now,
mm-hmm.
but I need you to also understand that you may not be able to play football when this is over. So let's get to the money now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's teach you how to be strategic about this money while you're getting it. In the lump sums that you're getting it in, because people, you're valuable right now. You're
mm-hmm.
hot. You're
yep.
the brand in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take this money
mm-hmm.
and let's be strategic about this money. Let's make sure that you understand that one day this will run out.
Because
mm-hmm. if you don't go to the NFL, guess what? The NILs go away. You're no longer marketable.
That brand is gone.
So how can you establish a brand
mm-hmm.
where you're still marketable after you leave here?
Mm-hmm.
And the people that you perpetuate that, and you build a program where somebody comes to your institution and other kids can see that the university, the program actually cares about them, mm-hmm. and they can basically build people. Because that's the thing. If you're not building people, it doesn't matter
yep.
what you're doing. Nothing is going to continue unless you build people. If you build the people, mm-hmm. the money, the funds will come. Mm-hmm. Because the people that you build are going to make sure that you don't that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to say, hey, this changed my life. I got to make sure that I pay it forward and help mm-hmm. somebody else. So,
very good point. And speaking on that, as far as the building people aspect, because that was kind of what I was heading to towards my next point. And I always preface this by saying, I never want to cast aspersions to a PWI and say they don't care about, mm-hmm. you know, their black student athletes and yeah. stuff like that, because it's a lot of student athletes throughout the NFL that's professional athletes, now I should say, that swear by their head coaches, the Sabins, mm-hmm. the, you know, the Bimbos and all those guys of the world, mm-hmm. you know, they swear about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not saying they don't care about them, but I would like you to kind of speak on the experience it is coming up through an HBCU, because, like, you know, when Dion was first brought on the campus, and, you know, he always posted clear. He was a very open person. He wasn't, you know, he didn't do anything behind the scenes. He kind of, you know,
documented
everything.
Everything.
And, you know, it was the one of the videos I seen kind of early on while he was there, where he was braiding the young lady's hair, you know. Mm-hmm. Just showing like, hey, I'm a dad. I do this too. And, you know, how he interact with the young men.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of speak on the experience of, as a black male, how you felt being around more of your people and, you know, kind of being nurtured through that environment that you know that you wouldn't have got nourished going the other route. Because I know, like, people don't know you sitting down right now. Hold on. You sitting down right now, but people don't know you 6'5", right. prototype, could have been at least. So it's not like you had to pick a HBCU
right.
or that was your only option.
Right.
So let them know what it is, you know, when sometimes, you know, like you feel like this is my calling. This is the route I want to go. This is what I'm comfortable with. So just talk about how it was coming up through that.
So I'm different in the fact that I'm willing to talk about the plight and the pros
mm-hmm.
of HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be completely honest with you when I tell you that me and my teammates went through some things that I promise you, if you sent your son to school when I was there,
mm-hmm.
you would absolutely take your son out of that school. Someone asked me a question 3 years ago when this whole Dion thing started.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me a question. They said, Derek, you excelled
mm-hmm.
At your institution. And what I mean by excel, I think I got to preface and make sure that I say
mm-hmm.
That I was All-American.
Mm-hmm.
I was an All-Conference guy. I started as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I think 7th or 8th game or something like that. I was a MEAC player of the year. Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. Pigskin Club selected me as the player of the year in my conference.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say excel, I mean excel.
Credentials.
And so here's the reality. The reality is that some of the things that we had to endure, for example,
mm-hmm.
We come to training camp in July. We did not get money from our institution until October.
Wow.
Net checks were not cut until October, which means wow. that we had to develop negotiating skills to talk to a landlord and say, sir, I assure you that as soon as I get this money, I will make sure that you have it.
Wow.
So here's the thing. You're not just paying for October. You got to catch up. So the $2,000 that you were getting was only paying for rent.
That's it.
So if you didn't have, and pardon me when I say this, if you didn't have moxie and a hustle about yourself, thank God I could have. If yeah. you didn't have a hustle, boy, you were not going to eat.
Wow.
And so if you stayed off campus,
mm-hmm.
yeah, what? That hot $2,000 they gave you, that was for housing and food.
Housing and took it.
Florida State, they were getting $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
But their housing already paid for. so that we're clear.
Yeah.
So I'm saying there is this thing where at an HBCU, you got to almost give the discount,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you have to discount yourself in order to be okay for the culture, or in order to be right with the culture. well, you know what, you shouldn't talk about the institution. Like, no, listen, if that was happening at LSU or at Alabama, what would you say?
Facts.
If it was happening at USC, what would you say? If student athletes that look like you and I came out and said, I'm at this institution, I'm playing football for this institution, I'm going out here, put blood, sweat, and tears on the line, and I got to figure out how I'm going to eat. Come on, like something is wrong with that. So I'm saying, now that may not necessarily be the dynamic. Now I think it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But when I was in school, I'm telling you, that's something that you had to deal with. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of it, the instructors, the deans, university administrators, mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, and I will tell you that they showed love.
Yeah.
Your instructors, you could walk up to your instructor and you could say, hey, I'm dealing with a tough situation. I'm going through a tough time. Mm-hmm. And is there anything that I can do to make up these assignments or make up this work? Mm-hmm. You weren't just considered a number. Mm-hmm. You felt like they would give you an opportunity and they cared about who you were as an individual. I can rattle off numerous names of my instructors from college because of the conversations that I had with them outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. So that's the experience that a kid gets when he goes to an HBCU versus, I think, going to a Power Five where there are 200, 300 people in the classroom and you're just in there. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, most of their stuff, they're being tutored now anyway. So, you know, like, you just don't get that type of experience, I don't think, at a Power Five like you would at HBCU. Mm-hmm. And so the experience, they can't top the experience, and they know they can't top the experience. Mm-hmm. So they have to give them all the bells and whistles. They have to make sure that everything is up to par. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, the moment that they step on FAMU campus, which, guess when we bring them? We bring them at homecoming.
Yeah. Wide open.
Listen, I don't care what anybody says. FAMU homecoming is the best on the planet.
Yeah.
There is none. It is par excellence, sir. I went
now
to
look,
FAMU.
I done been to SU.
Listen,
I ain't been to FAMU, so I can't speak on it. But
listen, I'm just telling you.
Hey, that booth, it gets crazy around them homecoming.
Listen, I'm trying to tell you, sir. there is not one.
Nothing.
I'm telling you. When they come from their institution, they come to FAMU, we're going to slide over to FAMU.
Yeah.
Go check out FAMU. No.
What about classic-wise? What's the classic for y'all?
Listen.
Because I don't know. I ain't been to another classic like HBCU-wise, like Bayou classic.
I'm going to say it like this. I never really got a chance to experience a class because I played in it. So it's different when somebody is there like partying or whatever
the
case is. No. Like, I remember my freshman year, they were tying the sheets together.
Yeah.
Man, I shouldn't probably say this, but they were tying the sheets together to try to get out of the window.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like different stuff like that. Because they're like, man, we in Orlando, man. And there's some other stories I can tell you about. Man, listen, there was some wild stuff that went on with regards to being at homecoming. They take us an hour away on Friday night.
Yeah,
put us in some rinky-dink hotel, Mariana or. What's the other place? Apalachicola, some crazy place, and we over there, and I'm talking about Tallahassee is just lit.
Yeah,
and we somewhere in Apalachicola, what is it? Port St. Joe or somewhere like that.
Yeah,
don't even know where we are. Alarm clocks locked to the nightstand type situation.
Yeah,
we don't know where we are, man. Listen, I'm telling you, Coach Billy Joe made sure that he was not going to allow those festivities. To block the
nothing.
Assignment. Yeah. Now, Saturday night, you do whatever you want to
you
do.
Get loose. You get active after that.
Men, you always say to us, men, you got to be healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah.
So, men, I'm going to tell you this. Make sure you protect yourselves tonight.
Yeah.
Don't forget those prophylactics.
Keep them with you.
And if you're drinking... Make sure you establish who's driving.
Yeah.
You know, like different things like that.
That's
but
awesome.
it was that experience, man, at HBCU, you can't compare it to a Power Five. That is a major difference. And so, like I said, they have to give them the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
Because the experience is completely different. Mm-hmm. And couple that with the fact that you have, women from all over the planet that look like you, that are intelligent, that came from families who are progressive.
Some like-minded people.
Like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you know, it's a whole lot more of them than it is of you.
Yeah.
When I was at family, I think it was like 25-1 or something like that.
Crazy.
So have fun with that.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So look, like I said earlier about, you know, Tupac, like I said, about sparking a conversation that changed. Dion, even though he left and he's moving on, you know, this day. And then congratulations to Dion too.
Absolutely.
I feel like I said, he did his job there. He shined a light on it. But as we transition into this, what I was saying, now it might be other former players or some other night. They might not have the cachet. It's only one primetime.
Mm-hmm.
You get a nickname like primetime, you mm-hmm. get that for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be players with not as much cachet, but a name is, you know, as hot as far as like a name is right now, or a more current player that's maybe they want to come up through the collegiate ranks,
mm-hmm.
ranks, and they got aspirations of going to a Power Five or something like that college program. So do you think that could be something that could turn the tide to kind of keep that torch lit as far as like keeping eyes on it, to at least hold the establishment accountable?
So that's a slippery slope because Dion has a certain panache
mm-hmm.
about him, a certain gravitas when he walks into the room.
Facts.
Dion is Dion,
mm-hmm.
right?
Prime
so
time.
So there are other people that I'm hearing being thrown into the ring. You know, the mm-hmm. Ray Lewis's, the Ed Reed's,
mm-hmm.
different people like
okay.
that. Right?
Yeah.
And while I definitely respect their athletic prowess and their ability to perform at a very high level
mm-hmm.
when they were on the field, that doesn't always equate to being a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not even enough when we talk about being offered a Power Five job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to even be a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the bag. It's about, and I'm referring to an African-American coach.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
It's about the bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what you can, because the Charlie Strong experiment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Strong.
Mm-hmm.
Texas. Let's use Texas.
Texas Longhorns.
He's at the most heavily funded football program probably
Boosters
in the country.
Boosters don't mind. They don't mind.
Right? But he didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
So because he did not win, guess what? They did not give him. He had a short leash.
Very.
And Charlie Strong is a heck of a coach.
Heck of a coach.
But the leash was very short.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm saying that doesn't necessarily open up the floodgates
mm-hmm.
for African-Americans to be able to coach
mm-hmm.
at the next level. I watched my coach, and I'm just speaking, obviously he coached at the professional level, that sort of thing, as a position coach. But I'm saying, I watched the things that Billy Joe was able to accomplish
mm-hmm.
With us. I'm just talking about with our class. So mm-hmm. we're talking about a short window.
Mm-hmm.
Four quarterbacks, all of them had an opportunity to go to the pros. Jawan Sider drafted in the sixth round. Quinn Gray played for 6-7 years in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Bonner, single season record holder at FAMU,
mm-hmm.
4,400 yards, 45 touchdowns in like 9 games or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Completely destroyed everybody. We had the number one offense in the country,
mm-hmm.
right? This foolishness, they came out with this foolishness with Willie Taggart in FSU talking about the Gulf Coast offense. That was not the Gulf Coast offense. The Gulf Coast offense was started across the railroad tracks
mm-hmm.
with this guy by the name of Billy Joe.
Yeah.
Shameless plug, my coach, listen, bar none, man. I'm telling you, the guy was phenomenal in terms of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
We never went into a game unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
Never. His quarterbacks called the game. We had no offensive coordinator. The conversation took place with him after they got off the field. Somebody may have had the position,
mm-hmm.
but there was no offensive coordinator talking to the quarterback. The quarterback walked up to the line, looked at the defense, called the play. Put us in the right pass protection and everything.
That's
so
crazy.
You have to be extremely intelligent to play quarterback for him too.
Uh-huh.
So every quarterback that I played with, every single one of them,
mm-hmm.
Oteeman Sampson, Patrick Bonner, Jaywon Sider, Quinn Gray, every single one of them got their shot. You tell me. You talk about quarterback whisper. Mm. You tell me what coach. We can say HBCU. But let's name some Power Five guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You tell four quarterbacks consecutively that got a shot.
That's crazy.
And I want you to think about the minimized publicity mm-hmm. that these guys had. No, they could play. Yeah. They could play, and they were brilliant. Yeah. And as a result of that, they were able to then, you know, go. Some of them went to Canada, you know, World League, different places, or whatever the case is. The dynamic is a little bit different now. If you mm-hmm. if you come in for nine games and you throw for 4,500 yards and 45 touchdowns, the conversation is completely different now mm-hmm. than it was then.
Exactly. Yeah.
In terms of that guy playing with Patrick Barnum, for example, he was probably one of the best signal callers that I've probably ever seen.
Yeah.
In terms of his ability and that thing that you got to have. He was like Willie Beeman.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just you're in the game. Factor, yeah. You're in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, a guy's about to blitz, and he says, "I dare you to blitz."
Yeah.
You can hear him. I'm in my stance, and you can hear him saying, "I dare you to blitz. If you blitz, it's a touchdown."
Yeah.
And they blitz, it and out. It's actually a touchdown. So I'm saying, like, things like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those things, I think you don't – guys – are going to go wherever they want to go,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, like, in comparison, man, like, there's no comparison to what they get, what they're offered at a Power Five versus the HBCU. But I think where we can stem the tide mm-hmm. and where we can kind of is through the experience and also through becoming more creative and developing partnerships and making sure that we understand how we can help these kids help their families and get long to the money.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it has to be that way.
Let me speak on something else you kind of brought up right quick. You just gave a lot of praises to a lot of coaches, a lot of your influencers, you know, your head coach mm-hmm. and stuff. So, you know, a lot of the hoopla has been made about, you know, Deion leaving and everything else been talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching aspect. How do you feel about Deion as a coach? X's and O's. Just strictly X's and O's. Where do you think he is at as a coach? We know motivational guy. He's that walking in the room, like you said. He has that, you know, you just got that swag about mm-hmm. it. You're going to gravitate to Deion. So that part is not in question. Mm-hmm. X's and O's, moving up to Power Five. First job, high school. Next job, HBCU. Straight to Power Five. We know what he can do on the field. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest of all time. Shut down corner. Mm-hmm. I can shut down one side. You know, everybody else, you shift the coverage, I'll do the rest. But X's and O's, as far as dissecting the defense or, you know, defending the offense,
mm-hmm.
where is he as a coach?
You know, honestly, I can't necessarily speak on it. I can only speak on what he's been able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a conversation about it today. You know, he took a school that basically had no reputation as a football program.
Mm.
And I would argue, how about you go and take a look at Trinity right now and see where they are. Three consecutive state championship back-to-back. They lost the first one, won the last two.
Mm.
All right? We can attribute that to the talent.
Mm.
Right? He goes to Jackson State, two SWAC championships back-to-back, two Celebration Bowls back-to-back. Honestly, when it comes to a head coach, I think it's different now. I think the head coaches now understand that it is not about you. It's about the team that you're able to put around you.
How well you can delegate.
And if you understand who is good at what, it's really no difference. The guys, for example, Billy, we would be in our dorm room and we could see his light on
mm-hmm.
at 1 o'clock at night. During the winter, sir. We can see the light on. He's that guy.
Yeah.
Right? Deion doesn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. He has guys around him that have played at a very high level that have done some things and they've been successful. You know, they say Coach Flea. Mm-hmm. Coach Flea, obviously, he's already said that he should be the next coach because technically he's the one that was running it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, it's widely known that that's the case. And so it's not necessarily about how good he is with the NCAA. We know that if we talking about wide receivers and you got a passing game, he knows exactly
what to do.
He knows exactly what to do. Even though he knows that he was an exception to every rule. Mm-hmm. Because you could literally put him on one side of the field and it doesn't matter what you did, nothing was happening.
Nothing was happening. Nothing shaking it on his side.
The great thing about him is he understands that everybody cannot do that. Mm-hmm. Everybody doesn't have that ability. Mm-hmm. And so he understands how to put players in the right position to be successful.
Gotcha.
No, you're not a man-to-man. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard Deion talk to defensive backs that ask him questions? Mm-hmm. No. See, you don't have that. Mm-hmm. So back your behind on up. Because you don't have recovery like I had recovery. Mm. If he beats you off the line, you're not going to be able to make it up. So back your behind up and play and zone it up so that you can go.
I can give you help.
I got help over. You got help over the top.
Yeah.
But you can't get beat off the line talking about you got help over the top. Nah. You know what I mean?
Nah, he can't be. Exactly. He can't lead the line with his hand up on it.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So I think he is he an X's and O's guy? I'm certain that he is. I know he understands the game. He played football. I mean, I'm trying to think of a time where he just got abused in the game, and I can't.
Mm-hmm. And look, speaking on that, and I actually did to say that because you know people from afar, they pick and pick and pick. Yeah. Certain, so I asked that question just to let you speak on it a little bit. But I was as anybody that know me growing up. It's a tie between my two favorite athletes.
Okay.
It's Deion Sanders and it's Michael Jordan.
Okay.
So if you understand their mentalities,
absolutely.
If you understand their confidence,
absolutely.
If you understand my thought process and what I consider GOAT.
Absolutely.
So when we have GOAT conversations, that's why I'm like, nah, my GOATs ain't walk and talk like them. My GOATs ain't back down when you know they're putting fire. But one of the things that I studied Deion because I played corner growing up, and that's what I looked at. I wanted to be like Deion. Mm-hmm. But what I learned in following him and just seeing what his routine was is how much they said he studied film.
Absolutely.
And no matter what his God-given ability was, he can come in on the tracksuit, run a 4-1, 4-2. We all know that story. We know he can, about the high-stepping at the 50-yard line. We know that story. We know the dance. We know all of that.
Yes.
But what people don't see is the preparation that goes into making all that happen.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I just wanted you to kind of speak on that aspect because it's time for us to get some of those, you know, those backroom deals, those under-the-table deals like what Jeff Saturday got.
Yeah. Come on.
So
listen.
When I speak on something, it's only to shine a light because this stuff has been going on with the McVays, these boy geniuses of the world that hadn't played a lick of, and it's not a knock on them because some of those guys are actually brilliant football minds because they've came up through football families. But again, it's because they awarded that opportunity to be in those rooms, to be in film rooms. Like, we didn't have access to no film. Like you said, we sitting in a man cave. Now, we didn't have access to film rooms. And our coaches sitting in high school, a special room. They breaking down film and they isolating your film just for DB. No, we all watching the same game field, same time. This is what we do. We trying to explain to everybody. Nah, they getting the intricacies of everything. As a little kid, they watching, like you say, those my son age. He and the McVays and the, Fishers and the Buddy Ryans and the Sons already coming through that pipeline.
Yeah.
They have access. That's what access and resources mean. When we say, like when Martin Luther King said, and I ain't trying to get, making that old Negro spiritual. Martin Luther King said, when you say pull up your bootstrap, that's a mighty cruel thing to say to somebody without a boot. Like,
absolutely.
We've done more with less for years.
Always.
And we've always persevered. So when we say give us a chance and give, it's not because we feel like we should just be handed something. It's that we showed. If you look what we've done with less, look what Deion did with Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you take him to a Power Five. Okay, if you change the culture in it, just give us the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Just mention our names in that conversation because there's a lot of coaches. Even with I know it was a coach. Who was it on the was it Reggie Wayne on the Indianapolis coach staff? It was coaches that was and they all. Hey, that came up with the Peyton Manning regime.
Absolutely.
They all play ball together. So, of course, he's not going to knock Jim Saturday. But you think, as he go home, drive home, like, damn. Been on the sideline all, taking these lumps on the head. I couldn't have just got moved up, And he would never say that publicly. And he might not even feel like that.
Funny. And, the crazy part about it is that the mentality is, and you have to almost have Deion's mentality. I dare you to give me an opportunity.
I dare you.
I give me an opportunity, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the thing that I don't like about the situation is the needle continues to move.
There we go.
Like, it continues to move. Mm-hmm. So you got to have experience at the college level in order, you know, at least you got to be an assistant head coach.
At least.
In order to get a head coaching job. Okay, so then we get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then we go into an interview, right? And they name you a finalist.
Mm-hmm.
But you went into that final with someone that didn't have any assistant head coaching at all, and they end up getting the job. Mm-hmm. How many times are you going to interview?
Mm-hmm.
How many times is it that you're gonna knock on the door and nobody's answering before you say, you know what, let me get back in my car and go on back to my house? You know, I'm still pretty cush. I'm still comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that is it. We're being lulled into a slumber. And that's why Deion is important, because he's not going to allow you to sleep, right? He's saying, listen, I know that y'all got an issue with the fact that I left, right? That's something that y'all gonna have to deal with, because I see something bigger, right? Everybody, you know, like you said, there are different takes on the situation, but the reality of the matter is that he sees something that's far grander, far greater than what we've seen. Like we're extremely myopic, right? We
tunnel view.
Okay, man. He got to stay at Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna stay at Jackson State, where they're paying me $300,000. Right? Not only are they paying me $300,000, I'm expected to only take the $300,000.
That's it.
Even though I've given you two SWAC championships back to back, you haven't been in contention for 20 years.
Two decades.
2 years. When does it become a situation where we don't expect for people to give the hometown discount? Let me shift that. The cultural discount.
Man.
Because that's what... So you have two.
That's what the uproar
the
about.
Two side, the uproar is about him.
You should take one for the team.
Take one for the team.
You good.
This is for the culture.
You good.
Wait a minute. So you mean to tell me taking this position at a Power 5 school, right, where I'm exposing young men, because 80% of the team is going to look like me and you no matter where
anyway.
He goes.
Anyway.
No matter where he goes, 80% of the team is going to look like me and you. You mean to tell me you have a problem with a kid being taken out of New Orleans, Louisiana, Miami, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, from zone 3, zone 4, zone 5, you know, the Ninth Ward, all right, the Poke and Bean Projects, and being exposed to Boulder, Colorado, and having an opportunity to network with different groups of people that can change the trajectory of their life. If you have a problem with that, there is something wrong with you fundamentally.
Man.
There is something wrong with your mind.
Man.
And so now we got to figure out how we're going to shift that paradigm.
That's it.
There's a paradigm that has to take place.
Mm-hmm.
That's all Deion is saying. He's saying that without saying it.
Yep.
There has to be a paradigm. Yeah, I love y'all, man, but we can't continue to do this.
We can't be
effective. And change things.
Yeah.
How in the world, if we continue to do the same thing that we've been doing, how in the world are we going to get results? It's not going to happen.
You know, and I tell everybody, like any job I go to, everybody know one of my main pet peeves, I hate pageantry. I hate doing stuff just to do stuff. Right. Or just to say we did all it. It looks good. Yeah. You know, so, well, like you say with Deion, I'm not going to be parading that. Hey, that the, you know, the honor system, yeah, I called one in.
Yeah.
You know, Deion came in, we talked to him.
Yeah.
Like, nah, he ain't gonna use me as your token.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So he broke the mold, but what I want my people to understand is that every the bus is only so big. Everybody's not designed to go on every trip with you. Mm-hmm. It's only so many passengers on every ride.
Absolutely.
Because that mindset, some people's mindset might not be able to handle Colorado.
You better believe it.
Some people that's playing in Colorado might not be able to handle HBCU. Mm-hmm. So we stop having to put such a negative connotation when people do stuff and it's from a pure place. I don't know Dion from a can of paint.
At all.
But I know the impact he's made on the young men and from the clips I've seen and just from the traffic I've heard. They swear
right.
by it.
Right.
Stand up guy. And just from me looking from afar, because like when I say I have two of my favorite athletes, like some people, you know, like they can't criticize their favorite. Man, that's a lot of shit Jordan do. I don't co-sign with.
Absolutely.
But I know what he when he got on that court what he did, and he was a dog. But I don't co-sign with everything he did.
Right.
So I can speak from a place of, and I don't judge no man off what the
everybody else
the, a white
Absolutely.
Noise is.
Absolutely.
I judge it off what I see,
right.
and just from all accounts of what I've seen and how he's carried himself, he's a stand-up guy. He's taking care of those kids. Those kids swear by him. He's put a lot of them in a better predicament in than they probably would have ever thought of becoming. Changed the narrative as far as HBCUs. So I applaud Dion, and I know we're about to wrap up, but man, what else you got going on as far as you and, you know, what else you got going on with your brand? I know you're doing a lot of stuff, so before we close out, I'm going to let you speak on that a little bit.
Well, I'll say this. There's a lot coming down the pipe, man.
All right.
Obviously, with me this past year, well, you've known me for a couple of years now. As you can see, I'm a lot lighter. A
lot lighter.
In 22, mm-hmm. I made a decision that I was going to change me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that I felt like I could do that was to let go of some of the baggage. And by baggage, I mean weight. A lot of times people, they don't understand that, like, the things that you're carrying sometimes can manifest outwardly. And so when I looked at myself in the mirror one day and I said, I don't like you a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that that was the last day that I was going to accept that version of myself. And
man,
so I made a decision that day that I was going to do it. And within 100 days, I adopted a name. Before it even happened, I started calling myself Mr. 100 Days because mm-hmm. I said that I was going to lose 100 pounds in 100 days. And it's one of the most disappointing things that ever happened to me because I was short by 2 ounces.
Wow.
And so I lost 99.8 pounds in 100 days.
That's major.
And
man. Congratulations.
Within 6 months, I lost a total of 125 pounds. I really backed off, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. after dealing with a health scare.
Mm-hmm.
Walked into the doctor, had a health scare. I backed off and started really focusing on, you know, myself and
mm-hmm.
making sure that I was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I ended up at the end of it, 125 pounds and a lot smaller than I was. And in addition to that, we're going to be trying to help some other people do the same thing.
Yeah, that's what's up.
And so that's one thing. The other thing is obviously I made sure that I made it my business to honor God. That's
mm-hmm.
that's first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a decision that I was going to make sure that God was honored through my gifts,
mm-hmm.
through my life and that sort of thing. And so, we're going to be talking a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, helping young men, helping, you know, men in general,
mm-hmm.
Helping people. The goal has always been to make sure that people are empowered. I live by a model. The model is to engage culture, inspire change, and make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you can do that is if you adopt the mindset that your gift is valuable
mm-hmm.
and that in the hand of God, nothing is impossible.
Thanks.
So I believe that in the coming months, as we begin to unpack some of the things that we're doing, whether it's Dope,
mm-hmm.
Dope Dallas, or Legacy,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be an amazing ride. And just
That's
stay tuned
up.
Because
Most dope.
God's doing some amazing things.
Most dope. Look, you know you are, man, you family, man. You come stop by the show.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Let me know what's going on. Update the people. Let them know what's going on with the brand and as far as your new venture and just keep us up to speed, man. You know, I'm always here. You know, we travel in the same circles because we kind of work in the same industry. But your guy David been bragging on you, man. Every time I see that, I call him Slim. Yeah, now he's telling me how good you look. So I was waiting to see. I ain't gonna tell you, but I was waiting to see you hit the door.
Yeah.
But he had been bragging on you, man. So
I will share this with you, man. It all literally, man. I'm at my desk,
mm-hmm.
and it nearly brought me to tears, man.
Mm-hmm.
David comes up to me. Now, for the people that are listening,
mm-hmm.
David is a middle-aged, successful white guy,
mm-hmm.
right? And he comes up to my desk, and he says to me, he says, I got to tell you something. I got to share something with you. And I'm like, what's up? He says, I got to tell you what's happened with me over the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I went to the doctor and I was basically, you know, health with my blood sugar and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the first person I thought about was you.
Wow.
And he says, I've watched you
mm-hmm.
over the past year transform yourself. And he said, I said in that moment that if he could do it, I know I can
do it. I can do it. And he damn sure smiled.
And so he's basically dropped, I think, something like 40 pounds yeah. or something like that.
I seen his little cuffs falling off.
Blood sugar has yeah. basically dropped tremendously off medication. He was taking medication off medication. I mean, it was just, man, it was so impactful.
Yeah.
Because you never know who's watching.
Who's watching, man.
You never know who you're impacting.
Yeah.
And so we can go around in circles all day about this stuff. But there are people that are always watching this,
and are inspired.
And they are inspired by who we are. No matter how small you think you are,
somebody's
inspired by you. And so we got to make sure that we give them something to see.
Hey, look, man, look, I appreciate you stopping by, man.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate the time. Appreciate you speaking on this topic. You were the subject matter expert for me that I can tap into. So I wanted to make sure I exercised that. But, man, y'all know how it is. You know how we end everything. Always visualize your goals, and after that, accomplish those visualized goals. 9/11, gone.